Roto-Grinders presents the Daily Fantasy Fix Podcast. Bringing you up-to-the-minute industry news.
Time for me to tell you about the biggest tournament in the history of daily fantasy sports.
Interviews from the biggest names in the industry.
The one and only Kondia. Head Chopper joins us now to talk about this weekend in daily fantasy football. Now on the podcast, Napster Man.
And game analysis to save you time and help you build your bankroll.
Both the salary and the matchup are just too good. If you are not playing him in your head-to-head game, you are just going to lose.
Here is your host, the one and only, Dan Bach.
Hey, everybody. Good afternoon. Good morning if you're out there on the West Coast. And welcome to this special edition of Grinders Live here on rotogrinders.com. If you're not familiar with me, I am Dan Bach. And excited today to sit down with one of the co-founders over there at DraftKings to talk about some of the important things happening at DraftKings and the industry. And we love kind of having this to sit down and talk with big important people over there at DK. And joining us today, co-founder Matt Kalish joins us. Matt, welcome. How are you?
I'm doing really well, Dan. How are you? I don't have as good a lighting as you, but
Well, we'll work on that next time. But
my fault. They don't take good care of me over here with the whole fancy lighting. Unfortunately,
I was gonna say, you look like you're in a prison there with white walls behind you, and that's it. But
it's all good.
Very palatial offices of DraftKings. But a lot of stuff for us to hit up on. We're going to talk about a variety of topics here today. Obviously, we're going to spend some time on community guidelines and some of the changes to the late swap and some other things pertaining to DraftKings. But before we get into that, I obviously want to start off on the news that kind of hit this week with you guys and in the state of New York, where you guys reached a settlement with the attorney general out there. Which is actually going to cost you and FanDuel $6 million. Now, talk about that situation. How happy are you to kind of have this behind you? And what do you think DraftKings learned most about that experience in terms of advertising and what took place there?
Yeah, I think first we're really, happy to move on from the whole scenario in New York. It was a 12-month process and, throughout that time, I think we were really impressed that over 100,000 of our players, wrote letters to state legislators. They reached out. They let them know how important to them fantasy was. And I certainly don't think we'd be, back in New York and past all of this had we not seen that kind of outreach. A lot of, assemblymen, state senators said that, there's no issue that they've heard this strongly from in terms of their constituencies. And that was awesome to see. It feels good to, be working on a product that people feel that strongly about. And I think for us, we're just happy to kind of wind down that that stage of things and move on. Things have been going really great with NFL, with NBA. Lots of new customers have signed up and started playing, during this football season. And I think we're ready for kind of that next chapter now and just moving on from the things that have in some ways consumed us in the industry in the last 12 months. And I think what we learned is that there's some value in, we grew really, really fast over the last 1 or 2 years. And it was awesome to be a part of. But when things move that fast, I think, it can be hard to keep up on everything and all the different moving pieces and areas of the business. And by slowing down and really building out, all of these really critical functions more and more, like our compliance team, our legal functions, et cetera, just slowing down everything a little bit, I think has some huge benefits. And, I think that's been the big theme in the last 12 months for us has really been just shoring up all the areas that we thought, we made some progress in, but we had more to do. And I think we're at that point now where we can say, we're doing that.
There was also a report kind of in conjunction with this talking about the potentially having, financial distress there with these companies. How are things looking at the moment right now on that front? Obviously, we're not going to get into specs, but, can you kind of address some of those reports that were out there that said that, things aren't going well financially for you guys?
No, I mean, I think we're still growing. It's kind of hard to believe for some people, but we're doing really well as a company. I mean, NBA launched 2 days ago with the regular season. We're seeing, like massive records basically every day. Football has been extremely stable. There's been huge growth in football. Yeah, so I think it's the kind of best case scenario in a way. You know, us and FanDuel both spent much less on marketing this year, much, much less. And I think we weren't really sure what that would mean in terms of, you know, would we grow this year? Would lots of new people sign up and play? And we've been very pleasantly surprised, I think, with that kind of growth that we've seen. And regardless of all the things that have gone on externally and the lower marketing weight that we've had in the market. So we're pleased. Everything's going really well over here. The team's continuing to grow. Like, we're adding headcount. We're adding to the platform, making big investments in a lot of different teams and areas.
Yeah, we'll hit up on some of those too. I think you guys are really innovating in some really good spots. Let's talk a little bit about that though, because segues right into my next question. You know, week one will admittedly be a little bit rocky for you guys at DraftKings and pretty much across the industry, but I've seen a really solid bounce back in terms of your games filling NFL-wise. Now, obviously the circumstance is a lot different this year than last year. Like you mentioned, the marketing scaled way back. Not in several states that you were in last year. All things considered, how are you in terms of comparing last year to this year in terms of game size and players on the site, and you know, even growth, like you talked about, considering the marketing expenses that you guys have are, gosh, I can't even imagine how much less they are this year than they were last year.
Yeah, a lot less. I mean, I think what we're really seeing is our player base is evolving, you know, the sort of games that are, we still have the Millionaire Maker, which is very popular. And, you know, big $3 game and things like that, I think are still very popular, but we're seeing some subtle shifts in, you know, our game mix. And I think we're seeing growth, but in a lot of cases, it's in games that aren't the Millionaire Maker, you know. So, or the live final or something like that, the big kind of marquee headliner stuff. So that's fine. I think it's just preference of players as they get into the industry more and they want to sort of diversify what they're playing. They want to play more, you know, 10X games. They want to play more double ups, things like that. We're seeing kind of average buy-in kind of trickle up a little. So a little bit, I think you might have noticed like our $300 game this year, it's up to 1.6 million. Last year, it wasn't even a million. It's like, it wasn't even close. So it's just kind of shifting around a little in terms of where that is, but there's definite growth.
Let's turn to the community guidelines. Now, this is a topic that's kind of discussed at length in the forums here at RG, and it's really kind of been the first time that we've ever seen a site kind of publicly address something like this and coming out and saying, hey, this is allowed, this is not allowed. Take us quickly through the process of coming up with those guidelines and why you felt that disclosing them was necessary.
Yeah, I think it all started with this point of view that, you know, fantasy is a social game that people talk about. So there's no way you could have a policy like, you know, don't talk about fantasy on Twitter or something. It makes no sense, right? Don't write about fantasy. So people are going to talk, they're going to, you know, debate players, they're going to talk about strategy, and that's fine. And what we tried to do with the community guidelines was really establish at what point would collaboration become an issue in terms of fairness on the platform. So we were looking for specific things that we could explain and point to that would be behaviors that a group of people could do that might create an advantage over somebody playing alone. And by distinguishing that from, you know, just any general social play or talking with friends or something, I think that was the key to what we were trying to get at with the guidelines. And I think I've read the RotoGrinders threads at length, actually, and it's kind of amazing, like you read through all the different points of view and some people, you know, think all of these issues are very black and white and obvious. Some people don't even understand like why it would be a problem. Some people say it can't be enforced. You know, there's all of these different points of view out there. And I think to some degree, everyone's right a little bit. You know, these are issues that no one's tried to solve before. We're really the first one to go out and try to outline these sort of policies and put the enforcement in place. So I don't think anybody is saying these are like super black and white easy issues, but I think what is important is to be very clear that we're not just going to accept like group play behavior that's specifically designed to gain an advantage over somebody playing alone. Like, we want people to have their own point of view when they're playing and exercise their own skill, and that's important to us. So we've been working really hard, I think, on all of the processes, all of the monitoring, all of the sort of enforcement that we would need to have in place in order to, to the best of our ability, execute against these guidelines.
Well, tell everybody about a little bit how the process works in terms of somebody being flagged, whether it's via, your own team monitoring something, or, somebody, emailing the game integrity unit and saying, hey, this looks fishy. Take me through kind of that process of what you guys do if there's something that doesn't look right going on.
Yeah, so to start, there's two prongs to, I think, the data that our game integrity and ethics team looks at. One is we have an inbox that is public that anyone at any time can write into. And if they have any sort of concern about something that they've seen, they're worried somebody might be violating the guidelines, they can always write in, and that stuff always gets reviewed promptly. Then secondly, we have some data scientists internally who have been working on more and more different monitors and tracking methods where we're able to go through and detect certain things that we're trying to prevent. So those two streams create, what the team works on, the list of things that they look at.
And, no, yeah. Well, go ahead, continue.
Yeah, Karen, from there, it's just effectively like a team of people that goes through the information and they try to come to a judgment on whether or not there's some kind of unfair advantage being gained by a group.
I know a lot of people get frustrated because you guys don't really comment publicly on these cases, these investigations. Explain to everybody why you don't. And also, though, the flip side, in terms of from our point of view, how are we supposed to know that things are being policed and that, you guys are putting your foot down against situations if you aren't kind of disclosing what's happening?
Sure. I think that's fair. And look, I think it all comes down to we have a certain obligation around privacy of users on the site. Just to give you an example, if you got accused by somebody you have no idea who they are, wrongfully, that you did something in violation of the community guidelines, you would not want us going across a bunch of platforms, blasting your account information everywhere.
Sure.
I didn't do anything wrong, right? So there needs to be some controls in place around privacy. You can't just go around like spraying people's information everywhere. And so what we've said on that topic is we're not going to release people's individual private information as it relates to things that we're looking into. However, that by no means certainly does not mean that we don't take significant action in many, many cases when we detect things that we don't like.
One of the things that was in the guidelines was lineup selling. And how exactly is this something that's being policed? Because I'm kind of curious, is it a situation where you guys actually reach out to the users and say, hey, we see you're using a lineup that 100 other people are using and you've done it for 3 consecutive days. Please stop using said pre-made lineup. Or are you guys reaching out to the people who are supplying them and asking them to stop? I'm kind of curious how that works.
Yeah, so I think the best path, again, like these are problems that we're trying to solve for the first time. So in some ways, we're still honing, I think, the best ways to solve the problems that we need to solve. So far, we've seen the best path has been, the people providing the lineups. Usually you can explain to them the guidelines and they're very reasonable. They will adjust what they're doing, and that to us is the best solution. You don't want people to stop talking about fantasy, stop creating content. But for us, really, the line is drawn when people can do zero work and they're just sort of getting a free lineup that doesn't reflect, their skill, their point of view on the game set, their own analysis. And it's not a skill game at that point. You're just kind of buying a lineup. Like, what's the kind of, it's just
there's no ownership of them doing the lineup.
It's not in the spirit of the game. Like, I think I've said it before, like, fantasy is definitely an open book test. There's so much information out there, and that's fine. But I think there's a certain line when if you cross it, it's more of a cheat sheet than an open book test, if that makes sense. So we don't want people sort of playing the game that way on our platform. It just isn't really in the spirit of the competition.
Yeah, and it's tough too, because, you know, there's also been a lot of talk about players who, you know, use identical lineups, but they do it through their research together, and then they end up using the same lineup in, say, a 50-50 contest. I mean, have you guys looked around, and have you guys recognized where we might actually have, you know, quote unquote, I don't want to say team play, but people who use the same methods of research but aren't doing it to maybe circumvent rules? You know, they just basically research together. Maybe they use the same model. But have you pinpointed those people? And if you do you like ask them and say, hey, we realize you guys work together, but you can't be entering, you know, the same games, for example, because that's really where I think a lot of people have a problem with it, is single entry games, you know, 3 or 5 man games, and then they see two guys with the same lineup in it. How do you guys kind of address that situation too? Because it's a little bit different than lineup selling, but still you're talking about a duplicate lineup being used by multiple individuals.
What we want to see is people log on, they build their own lineups, they use their own brain to do that. They decide what games to play on their own. There's no sort of collaboration, cooperation as it relates to what you're playing or what lineups you're using. And I think in some ways, any kind of cooperation would be against the spirit of the rules. Like if you said, oh, I'm not going to play these games because, you know, somebody else is playing them, or vice versa. Yeah. We want people to just do their own thing, if that makes sense, on the platform. You know,
sure.
Build your own lineups, pick the games you want to play. And people who are doing that, I think, generally speaking, are in the clear. I mean, there's nothing wrong with sort of independently playing the way you want. And most of the things that we've seen that are kind of red flags to us are some kind of cooperation. You know, there'll be cooperation in an attempt to get an advantage in some way.
Anything in upcoming on this front in terms of like consumer protections that you guys are looking at beyond the guidelines, or adding more things to the guidelines? Can we expect more on this front moving forward?
Yeah, we don't. I mean, it evolves quickly. We don't, I think, have any reason to believe that this is the final state of, you know, the community guidelines. You know, I think we'll continue to learn more. We'll observe more. And things change as the game matures. I think, you know, strategies, tactics, et cetera, things will just continue to evolve, tools that are available. And so you're never really shut off. Like, I think you always have to be up to date on what's really going on in the industry and try to just make sure that you're creating a level playing field for everyone. And that's the key. I mean, I think we're happy with the initial rules that we have, but yeah, I think it's very fair to say it will continue to evolve to be added to over time.
Now, NBA season got kicked off a couple days ago, off to an amazing start. You filled a $1 million, $4 tournament, which, to be honest with you, I didn't think you were going to do. And then you rolled out 3 500K tournaments yesterday, nearly filled all of those. So clearly NBA is just a dynamo in terms of the desire of people to play. But, of course, the biggest news came prior to the season. And you guys, DraftKings, decided to remove the late swap feature. Let's talk about it. Take me through that decision-making process and why you ultimately decided to do what you did.
Yeah, so talk about questions that there's not consensus on. I mean, it's probably about as close to a 50-50 thing as you'll find. I mean, we've done our own research. I think you guys have probably done research. Yeah. The argument against late swap, I think, is a couple of things. One is very few people use it. It's a, believe it or not, not a very highly adopted feature. It's like low single digit amounts of people using late swap. So usually features that we have, you know, people use them, you know, like our My Lineups page or something. So we were a little surprised by that. I think more importantly, though, in NBA is probably the worst of the sports with this. If you're not checked in the whole time, the whole night, if you're not monitoring every piece of news, if you're not out there, you know, reading Twitter, it's really tough to compete. Like, how do you sit back and relax and really enjoy the night of NBA when you're constantly kind of worried about something happening that might influence in some way the lineup you want to build, right? So long as it's a level playing field, which it is, nobody has late swap, I think it's a much better experience on the back end. And I will say the number one thing I've heard post that announcement has been people worried about things like injuries. You know, there might be an injury at 8 p.m. that I could have gotten my guy off of. And I think that is true. However, it's certainly not the most popular reason why late swap gets used. It's actually more of an edge case, believe it or not. So the most common thing that you see is kind of people just tinkering. They're seeing something that might be a storyline in a game. They're kind of tinkering with what they had as a result of that. It's not like getting off of zero to a number that's not zero. It's like subtle, subtle kind of strategy like that. That I don't know. I think it really takes away from your ability to just sit back and enjoy the game. So we decided to try it in NBA. I think we're, you know, not taking anything for granted. You know, it's what we're doing now, but we're not taking for granted that it's 100% the right call. And we'll continue to monitor it. And I think as we go ahead into sports like baseball, into football next year, we'll have the same discussion. Like, we'll probably look at how it went in NBA and try to decide, you know, do we want to roll back what we did in NBA? Do we want to carry it forward into other sports? You know, so it's far from decided on that front. But I understood, and I think everybody at DraftKings understood, that it's not an issue that, you know, 100% of people would love if we took it away or if we left it. You know, it's pretty down the middle, I think, in terms of what people want.
All I know is I don't want to be a DraftKings support agent when that first kind of big late, you know, scratch kind of happens. It won't be pretty to be them because people are so used to that. But as I've always said, you know, think of it in the long term, you know, all the times where it might burn you, it also might help you down the road. So hopefully that variance kind of evens out in the end. But and you kind of alluded to it, so it doesn't sound like you're completely committed to not, you know, getting rid of it for other sports down the road. It's kind of just a wait and see, you know, situation in terms of what happens here with NBA and also, you know, maybe what happens in the industry moving forward.
Yeah, I'm confident we did the right thing, but I understand people aren't universally going to agree. And therefore, you have to keep an open mind. You can't just shut off and pretend like nobody has an opinion. Yeah, I think we're digesting all the information that we're hearing from players. We're trying to understand, you know, if it in fact is the right thing for the game. And, you know, it wouldn't make sense to lock into a position permanently. Like, we change things all the time. I mean, we just changed our UFC rules. You know, we added a fighter. We rejiggered the scoring. I think that was based on feedback we got, but you can never be 100% sure that it's, you know, the best thing for the game. So like everything else, we'll just continue to monitor it. And I think hear the feedback that we're getting and try to come to a point of view on, you know, what the best path is for that game.
Let's talk about maybe some potential, you know, gameplay changes maybe, because this has been a hot button topic, especially between sharp players. And that's the actual gameplay on DraftKings and pretty much most of the sites this season for NFL, is that feels like we're having increased overlap in lineups, where if you look at 50-50 contests, you'll see 70% ownership sometimes of multiple players in those games. And it's really frustrating for a lot of us, to whether it be a 50-50 or even a head-to-head, where you build this 9-man lineup and then you've got a 1v1, 2v2, because the salaries are so out of whack on certain players. And probably going to see it again this week with Devontae Booker and the news that broke. Is this something you guys are aware of? Because I've seen a lot of high-volume people say this is frustrating. I've seen new users say, hey, I'm scoring, you know, 160 points or 70 points and I'm not winning my contest here. What's going on? I think that this is something that is becoming a problem especially with football. Give me your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I mean, I can tell you our team, you know, the team that makes our salaries for games. What they look at after the fact is a lot of ownership data, and they try to figure out if it was distributed properly. And if not, that's sort of a underperformance in a way. Like, their performance is based on creating a good distribution of ownership. So no, we're not happy if something like that happens. And sometimes it's really difficult to control. You know, you put out salaries, somebody gets announced that they're out, and then you get the, you know, Booker situation or whatnot. And sometimes I think there's things that we could have looked at that would make the salaries better, you know? So it's a process. I think we're much better than we were a few years ago. We still probably have some opportunity to get better there, but I agree. I mean, it's critical to the quality of the game to have good distribution of ownership. And it's not fun for anyone, I think, if you have a 1v1, 2v2, or even maybe like three or four people different. It's not that fun. I mean, you want to have a lot of variety out there. So I think that's definitely something that's really high on our list, to make sure that we're always able to create that good distribution.
I thought you did a pretty good job opening night in NBA. It just seems like NFL has got to be a solution behind it, whether it's bumping up the backup so in case these things happen, because clearly you guys put out your salaries as early as you can, but and it's hard to predict these things. But when you had that situation like you did last week, where you just had so many obvious plays, what it does too is it skews everybody to go to somewhere else, because you've got these guys and just kind of builds itself for you. So just wanted to throw that out there. Another thing that people have talked to me about, you know, clearly the cost of doing business in daily fantasy has gone up with costs associated with regulation. And we've seen the sites, you know, raise their rate, tick up to maybe the highest levels we've ever seen. But the frustration that I've been getting from people is not necessarily like, you know, oh, they're raising the rate, this sucks. Now, some people are saying that, but I've been getting frustration from people saying, well, they're raising the rake to us as players, but then we see them doing, you know, videos with Boogie Cousins and Odell Beckham and Gronk and Ronda Rousey and spending money on those type of things. Can you address that frustration by players who might view investing money on that front as a worthwhile expense for you guys, as opposed to, you know, obviously the rake rising to what we've seen pretty high, you know, marks here in terms of historically for daily fantasy?
Yeah, I mean, we have a media business in a sense. I mean, I don't know if you've seen DK Live. I hope you have it on your phone. If you don't, I think you should.
That's up next.
It's a pretty cool platform. And on top of that, a lot of original video content that we've been doing through relationships that we've had with athletes, a lot of which comes from like team or league deals that we've had for many years. And I think what that does is it elevates the entire industry in a way. Like, you want to be more than just the game, right? You want to have a media presence. You want to have content that people seek out and they want to read. You want to have like the kind of best experience on the sweat side when you're going through the plays and you're watching DK Live or whatever. So I think it's important that the industry, you know, continues to evolve and doesn't get too satisfied with where we're at right now. I mean, we built a cool game, but that's pretty much, you know, not something that's gonna, I think, sustain an entire company, right? Like, you have to continue to innovate, continue to add to what you're doing. And, you know, for us, taking the media angle, trying to build out our media presence is really important. I think there's also things with like game variety and whatnot that we'll continue to invest in, adding more sports, adding more geography to the platform. But to me, it's just two different, it's completely different business units in a way.
Fair enough. You talked about the DK Live app, and I'm not just saying this because you're here, but it is great. I think it's one of the more unsung things that there is in daily fantasy. I use it every Sunday. It's way better kind of experience of following your games than you get on, you know, ESPN's app or NFL's app. I love it. It's really well done. So I want to, you know, commend you guys for that. Do you have ideas to expand that to cover other sports? Heck, I don't even know if it does cover NBA. I haven't looked, but is that something that you guys are looking to do? And talk about that and any other kind of potential products that you've rolled out. Obviously, leagues was something that you guys were really proud of. Kind of any trends you might have seen with those new rollouts this year?
Yeah, so DK Live has been great. I think it's the best sort of scoring app that you can watch alongside DraftKings, period. Like, it has all the scoring integrated.
It's great.
Really good. We're launching NBA in about a week, 1 to 2 weeks. So it will be for NBA, and we're going to continue to add. You know, if we offer it on DraftKings, we want to have it in there. Another question I've gotten on that was Android. You know, that's something that's also on the radar.
Sure.
Aside from that, I mean, leagues has been a really awesome addition to the platform, I think. And the problem that we had to solve was that when you're playing private games against friends and things like that, we didn't have a really great way to do that. You know, we had the public platform. You can go through and play, you know, the Millionaire Maker and all that stuff. But when you're trying to play against like a group of friends, coworkers, college buddies, whatever, there really wasn't a great way to do that. So we've seen awesome adoption on leagues. We've only had it for 2 months. You know, tons of people have been using it. It's, you know, a few six figures. So it's been good. It's been, I think, something that's really added a layer to the product and has really helped people who want to play with just like a smaller group of friends. And we've also seen it hasn't really taken away from the public games at all. They do that, and they also play the public game. So, you know, it's been a great thing, I think, for the platform. Another thing we recently did was we launched casual games, which is kind of the in the middle there between beginner, which we've had for a long time, and just the open field, kind of everyone can play games. And the way that works is if you don't have an experience badge, you can compete against other people who don't have experience badges either. So people who have played less than a couple hundred contests. And just launched that less than a week ago, I think, and it's been nice so far. We've seen, you know, one of the biggest reasons why some people didn't want to come back this year is there's a perception like, I don't have enough time to get ready to compete against the general population, so to speak. A lot of guys who have been here for years, you know, they're just better than me. I need more time. So with that being one of the biggest sort of objections or reasons why people didn't want to come back, we've seen casual games has really filled in that slot nicely in the first week.
That's good. I wasn't even super familiar with those. So I think that's a great addition. Are you going to get more customizable in your leagues as well, especially with NBA? You know, I think they're fun to do, but, you know, a year-long league, it seems like a little bit much where, like, even here on RotoGrinders, for example, if a bunch of users wanted to set up a league for, hey, we're going to do it for a month and we're going to play, you know, two times a week, are you going to add the ability for people to get more custom with how they do these leagues rather than just span them out through an entire year?
Yeah, I think in general, we have a few features that we want to do a second version on, if that makes sense. So sure. We launched leagues, got it out for football. It's been good, but I think there's plenty of feedback that we want to tackle. And I think a lot of the customization, the leaderboards, to your point, like being able to set a, you know, maybe it's like a season-long leaderboard for a certain sport or something like that. A lot of feedback, needless to say. So we have a few features, leagues being one of them. I think missions is one of them. Yeah, we have several features that I think we need to do a version two on that is pretty high on our list, actually. Like, before taking on anything else huge, I think we're going to try to shore up a few of these newer things that we've just launched.
Well, he is Matt Kalish. He is one of the co-founders at DraftKings. Matt, really appreciate your time. I know you're a busy man, and I know the community appreciates it as well to kind of come out and answer some of the tough questions that people have about things going on there. And really appreciate it. We'll catch up again down the road. And good job with all the recent rollouts out there and continued success. Thanks again for jumping on with us today, Matt.
All right, Dan. Talk to you soon.
All right. That's going to do it for this edition of Grinders Live. Obviously, stay tuned for all the great content we got here at rotogrinders.com all day long. I'm Dan Bach, and we'll talk to you again next time. See you, everybody.